At Farm to Table, we know how confusing healthcare is. We're here to simplify the healing process. We believe that healthcare should be simple. It should help people feel better. We listen deeply and take the time needed with each and every patient. We work together to develop a plan that fits into each patient's life and helps them to feel better faster. That's why we started the Table Talk podcast, to gather around the table with you, whether you're on your way to work, rocking a baby, or taking a stroll. We want to come together and learn about using a new healthcare approach that focuses on finding the treatment for the root cause of your symptoms. The journey for each person is unique, but together we can thrive. All right. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast. Tonight, we are going to talk about the importance of community and the importance of connection. So, and how that plays a role in our health and just our livelihood. And so today I get the pleasure of being joined by three of our Farm to Table team. So I will let them introduce themselves. We'll start with Sarah Anderson.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Sarah Anderson, and I have been a pharmacist since 2013. I am based in Minnesota and looking forward to having a wonderful discussion with these other ladies.
Awesome. Awesome. And then we have Christine.
Hi, my name is Christine Reynolds. I am one of the pharmacists within Farm to Table. I see patients here in California and Texas, as well as Illinois, and really excited to have this talk today.
Awesome. And then we have Sarah Batchoffner.
Hi, yeah, I'm Sarah Batchoffner, and I am another member of the team, and I see patients here in Montana and also patients in Utah.
Awesome. All right. So tonight we're really talking about community because we consider this in functional medicine and our functional medicine colleagues in, you know, the Institute of Functional Medicine and other people that are advocating for health really consider this to be a foundation of health, is the fact that we would be in community with one another. And so we know that this has been a challenge in the last year and a half or almost 2 years in this pandemic post-COVID era. And so we really want to take the time to talk about what's making us disconnected and how we can really change that and what we can do to really impact our health and connect with others. So we're going to start with our first question tonight. And that's, I want, you know, the ladies, feel free to whoever wants to answer first, go ahead. But why are we so disconnected? What is keeping us from really being in community with our neighbors?
Yeah, I think that's a great place to start. You know, I feel like even though we're so technologically advanced and we have, you know, the social media outlets, we really feel like we're more disconnected than others or than ever before. And, you know, it's because we're not really getting, especially within the last 2 years of COVID, like having that close interaction with one another, like physical interaction with one another. We're very separated, like through a screen. And that plays a big part in the negative consequences in our health. I feel like not only that, but we also, you know, we're relocating across the country or across continents for jobs. Some of us marry a lot later in life or not at all. And a good majority of us, you know, often raise our children away from our family, away from our parents and our siblings. I feel like all of those have a big impact in playing to why we're so disconnected.
Sure, sure. And then also our waking hours are spent in front of a screen. We are on the screen all day. You know, during the pandemic, we were telehealth all day long and we come from a telehealth space, but so that makes us even more have to make an effort to really engage with people. And not that you can't engage with people telehealth, because most of us, you know, we didn't meet in person until last fall when many of us were able to get together for a retreat and we had a connection, but definitely that joining together piece really helped us to become closer and have more interaction with each other during that time. But I think the social media aspect too, you have all of these connections with people and you read their you know, what's going on in their lives. You see their pictures and it like sort of tricks your brain into thinking like, oh, there's my friend. We're actually friends. In reality, like aren't thinking about you. You're not really engaged with them. And so it's not like a true relationship that you have? I mean, some of those people are, you're in, what is it like the little,
the close circle
in real life or something, yeah. Like they say like, oh, we're friends in real life, you know, but, sometimes I have to look up those acronyms that people use online, especially in the like boutique clothes selling world. I'm like, I don't know what this means. I got to Google this, but, but anyways, but those in real life friends we have, but there's a lot of this time that we're just spending, like engaging in like this almost fantasy life, whether it's like with popularity things or pop culture, or if it's just, you know, those scrolling down your Facebook or Instagram feed. So a lot of times I think that makes us think that, you know, life should be easy and life, you know, this is what the norm should look like. And in reality, life is not easy. It's not meant to be easy. And there are challenges that we incur like throughout our lives. And if we don't have that strong community, that can be really hard for us to manage when we don't have those people to reach out to and help, because that Facebook friends like across the country that is really not going to be the person that's going to be there for you to bring you dinner when you're getting a car accident and, you know, something happens and you need support. So, any other thoughts, guys, on why we are so disconnected?
Yeah, I also think you made a good point with the social media aspect. It fosters like a culture of just only showing the best of the best. And, you know, no one ever posts about any of the hardships. And so then you feel more isolated than ever because you're going through real life, but then you almost think like, well, no one else is. So maybe I'm just in this alone. So it's just not fact. It's just not reality.
Right. Yeah. And I think the times when people are like real, you know, on social media and actually show us those, like it does drive us to like want to follow that person more because they're actually feeling like authentic, you know, life. So
definitely.
Awesome. Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about why we need strong social connections.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think, you know, needing strong social connections, it's really, you know, we're not meant to live life alone and we're really meant to live life with others and with connections and have deep conversations with others and really be able to walk through life hand in hand with others, both in small groups, large groups, et cetera, at different stages and seasons of life. And I think that really shows, so I forgot to mention in my introduction, I'm also a nationally board certified health and wellness coach. And so in my coaching practice and when I'm coaching others, you really see how they light up when they know that you're authentically listening to them. And when you're affirming them and you're reflecting back things that they're saying, that allows them to open up even more and really allows them to brainstorm and think about their motivation behind different things that they're choosing to do or choosing not to do and their priorities, and all that plays into their health and their health choices and how engaged they are in other areas of their life, say with their providers, et cetera. So I just think that making connections with others in whatever capacity that looks like is just really key to allowing people to think deeper, answer their why, find their purpose, et cetera.
Awesome. Go ahead, Christine.
Yeah, no, I think you made some great points. I think, you know, just looking at from an evolutionary perspective, you know, in the hunter-gatherer times, like we were not often just singular individuals, you know, as nomads. Like we were often in groups of 50 or less, and having that communal bond, and we survived best in groups together. So just looking at it from an evolutionary perspective, I think that's why we see what we see in the evidence in the literature, finding that people who are in isolation or lonely, they actually have been found to have worsened like health outcomes, right? So they have higher blood pressure, higher incidence of insomnia and infections and depression and cancer. So it really does play a pivotal part in the health and well-being of each one of
sure.
us.
Yeah. And even in like faith perspective, as far as like God designed like human being, and he realized that Adam was not fit to like live alone and that he needed someone with him on this journey. And so I think back to that. And then also just so many times in scripture talking about community and, you know, the church as a whole is this, you know, community of people that believe the same thing. and Iron Sharpens Iron, and just lots of like discussion there about, you know, how we can live as one body that is made up of so many different parts. And, you know, we're all doing different things, but we're really like all on the same like life journey. So lots of cool things historically, as far as the design of everything goes, but also, you know, like Christine pointed out, this evidence, there's like trials that show this social support is a big predictor of survival, more important than physical activity, which we talk about a lot, and more important than pollution and smoking and all of these things that we know are detrimental things to our body, but they are not as important as that social support. So I think that speaks volumes to, you know, how important it is to have community. Sarah, did you have anything, Sarah Bachoffner, did you have anything else you want to add on this?
Yeah, I think all of those are really great posts or great points. And it really does have an effect on our health. And I think it's one that we don't realize. And so in this like quick, go, go, go life, we don't take the time to be like, oh, right, that's one of the things that should be on my list to do, instead of just like passing your spouse and the to-do lists and kind of connecting with your kids in the morning and the evening, like really even just those people that you see all the time, like that connection is sometimes even missing. And we just don't take the time to realize that it could use a little bit more of our thought process behind it.
Sure. Yeah. And I think about the rates of like divorce and everything in the country, and thinking this piece, this relational piece is so important to that. And if we aren't doing this, like we're not building that relationship, whether it's a spouse or whether it's our kids or other friends. And so it's so important to spend that time.
Yeah. I think to those points too, just all about kind of being intentional and making space for it. Cause like you said, Sarah, in the busyness of life, we don't necessarily prioritize it or even think of it as an option to prioritize. So I think just being conscious of that and aware of that in order to make it be something intentional that you put on your calendar or on your schedule, if need be, to spend that extra time in relation with others.
So speaking of that, I know this isn't one of our questions on the outline, but how do you guys find, and how are you intentional about being in community? Because I think that when we speak for our, we tell you, oh, you should do this. But what is it that we're doing to be intentional about being in community with others?
I can go first. So I know like this is very individualized, but I'm an only child. And for me, having a strong network of friends is very important to me, and cousins. So I have like 10 cousins who I'm extremely close with. And so I'm just very intentional. You know, they don't all live close by. They're all over the country, but I make sure that I foster that relationship. Once a day, I will text this group of like 3 girlfriends who they're like sisters to me. And, you know, we're all going through different life chapters right now, and everyone's going through different things, but just to make sure that they know that I'm here, you know, no matter what, I can jump on a plane and be there if they need them. Just because growing up as an only child, it can be lonely. And so developing those relationships were really important to me, and it's important to me to keep those relationships.
That's awesome.
I'm an only child as well, Christine.
Oh my goodness.
So yeah, you do think of your girlfriends as your sisters. I mean, because yeah, that they just are. And so, you know, similarly, I usually, you know, go for a walk over lunch or go for a walk at some point during my day. And I almost always call someone, one of my girlfriends, my dad, my grandma, whoever. And usually just, you know, most of the time someone will pick up and I'll just chat away while I'm on my walk. So, you know, kill two birds with one stone type of situation there. And also just always try to, you know, usually we always have something on the books. I can think 2 of my good girlfriends who live in the area, who went to college with me. We always try to schedule some sort of coffee date or happy hour once a month, at least, just to see each other and kind of rotate where we go, whether it's at a restaurant or a patio or one of our houses, et cetera. So I think just kind of always keeping that conversation open, whether it's through text or through phone, to try to get dates on the books to be able to get together and meet in person and have our schedules align.
Awesome. Sarah?
And I'm not an only child. I have two sisters. So I they're definitely like my, I try to connect with them as often as possible.
She cut out there for a second, but I am also one of three girls. So I share that with Sarah there, but I would say, you know, certainly connecting with family and making sure that we're spending time, that our kids are spending time in community with our family. And, you know, even some of our family is like 3 hours away, my husband's side of the family. And so trying to make an effort to, you know, be there and be present and not just get caught up in the busyness. And I know, you know, my son's almost five and a lot of like our people in the community are putting their kids in a bunch of sports and all these things. But I have held back a little bit on that with him because I don't want to fill the schedule with all these things right now, which is part of community, but it's almost like a show up, kids do their thing and you're not really, you know, as engaged, but trying to like make sure that the time that we are spending is valuable. I mean, we'll get there when we get there with him, but then also from a faith perspective, you know, we have been part of small groups in church for a long time. And I will say the most time, like the time that we felt like the most in community was a time when we were hosting a small group in our home and people came in every week and we studied the word together. And if we needed something, one of them was like right there. Like when my daughter was colicky and I wasn't sleeping and my husband decided he was going to go to this work trip in like Belize or something when she was 5 weeks old, I was like, you know, desperate. And my friend who was studying for MP boards, like she came over, she's got her book open and holding her and rocking her and just letting me sleep for a couple hours. And so just things like that, like just people like doing life with you and not just, hey, let's have this date, but like come around my table, like have dinner with us, like, you know, engaging. And now we live in a different place. So, I would say like, for some reason that like particular group was so rich in our community history, I guess you could say, but now we have a lot of neighbors that we are, you know, very engaged with. And it's the same thing. It's like, okay, we are texting on a daily basis to me and the mom, you know, other moms in the neighborhood. And if one of them needs something, like the rest of us are like, hey, like, how can we help you? And so really having those people, because like Christine mentioned in the beginning, we're living not next to our parents. My parents aren't down the street. They're an hour and some away. And my husband's parents are 3 hours away. And so it's finding those people that are going to be your core family, essentially away from your family. That's so important to not being as stressed and having this like stress response. So I know we were going to talk a little bit about stress and negative health outcomes. Christine, did you want to talk to what you wanted to share there?
Yeah, that's a good leeway into that. So so the question is, you know, how does stress cause these negative health outcomes, and how does, you know, isolation in particular? So when we're in isolation, we're more stressed. Our HPA axis is activated. Historically, you know, when we're not living in such a high-paced environment, we balance between this fight or flight and this like rest and digest phase, or I'm sure people have heard of it as the sympathetic and the parasympathetic phase. But now in the hustle and bustle of the world and always being plugged in and on social media and having to just be on it at all times and working 12, 14-hour days, sometimes you never get that relax, rest and digest phase. And so when that sympathetic system is constantly activated, from an evolutionary perspective, it was beneficial when we were, you know, running from tigers and bears and needed to run long distances or fight, and the blood gets, you know, shunted to those our extremities, and it gets shunted away from our vital organs. And when that happens, that causes these damaging effects from chronic stress. And then really that's where we then see the long-term effects of the lack of social connection, which leads to, you know, atherosclerosis, inflammation, infections, insomnia, and so on and so forth. So that's kind of just like the pathophysiology of it all.
And the stress-induced hormone dysfunction that we talked about on our last podcast. When you're making all this cortisol, you're not making all those hormones to reproduce, because your body thinks that you need to be having that run, you know, running from a bear. And so that's really where a lot of the symptoms that a lot of women present with fatigue and signs, cramping and heavy bleeding, and all of these things can be, you know, related to some of the effects of stress on our hormones. So if you missed that podcast, go back and listen to that one. All right. Anything else we want to talk about stress or the need for social connections? If not, we'll move on to the importance of having community, not only in our home life, but also in the workplace. So for us being telehealth providers, I sort of mentioned at the beginning, we're a team of telehealth providers that are all over the country. So there's a few of us in Ohio, and I get to see on a somewhat more regular basis than the rest of the team. But we met in person in September and had a retreat, and just really the energy in that room of being together and working on this common, you know, goals that we're setting together was phenomenal. And it really helped us to be, you know, more united. And think about my husband's company. I mentioned that trip that he had to Belize. I think it was actually Barbados, but you know, whatever, who's keeping tabs there. But I did get to go to Belize with him the following year, so it sort of made up with that. But he is in this company that's completely distributed all over the world. And so what they do is they have these smaller teams that then those teams then meet up with each other and plan projects. And it's sometimes like people think, well, it's sort of silly, you work for a home-based company and you're getting to go to like these exotic places and things, but they found that it really changes the morale of the people, even if they're just meeting in like Cincinnati or like, you know, somewhere that's not exotic, you know, just being in that room together and having the energy together really helps them to have one better, you know, job satisfaction, but then also even just like more productivity, mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the other things that obviously employers are looking for. So you guys want to speak to that at all?
Yeah, just about the productivity. I know there's also a lot of evidence that suggests like the more PTO employers give their employees, they tend to not take as much. Yeah. But that when they do, they find when they come back, because they've been relaxed, they've been able to enjoy family, friends, whatever, increases their quality of life. And then they're more productive once they come back to work. So having that work-life balance is really key.
Yeah. Yeah, his company has what's called a no vacation policy. So basically it's you take time off when you need time off, and there's not like a specific number of hours or days, but it really does change like how they view work, like mm-hmm. how they invest their time, you know, in that, and, you know, even become more efficient in it, because it doesn't mean I have to sit at this desk for 40 hours a week. It means I have to do this job and keep moving forward on these projects. And so it just changes like the mindset of the employees when they're given a little bit more freedom there.
I hope other employers kind of
yes.
adopt that.
It's a little harder in the healthcare space, I will say, because you have to like have coverage, and you can't just have like all the doctors and pharmacists leave the hospital, you know, whenever they want.
Done for the day. Yeah. Right. No one's getting sick. It's fine.
Right. It's a little easier for tech companies, you know, to do those sorts of things, but I'm sure, you know, not impossible for some other fields. So yes. And just really, I mean, I think coworkers, it's too, you know, if you're managing people, you know, a lot of our pharmacy colleagues are managing other pharmacists or technicians. You know, in our space, we're in a family medicine office during the week. So we have MAs and LPNs that are, you know, working with us and trying to like, just make sure we're like in community with them too in that day, because you're spending so much time with that person. Sometimes if you're working a 40-hour work week, you're spending more time with the people that you're at work with than you are with your children or your spouse, you know, because the little time that you get while they're awake, you know, when you get home. And so really being intentional about conversations and about active listening. I think Sarah Anderson mentioned this at the beginning, but people just really thrive when they know that you're listening to them. And so when we're in these relationships, not just speaking to share what's on your mind or to have the last word, but to really engage with people and hear what they have to say is so important there.
And I think too, when you're in person with people or a group of people, like say for an offsite for your job or what have you, it really, when you make those connections in person, I think it also leads you to feel more comfortable being vulnerable with them. And I think that that just also improves company culture and morale and allows people that space to really build that foundation of trust and then be able to be more efficient with regards to collaborating and mm-hmm. et cetera with their work.
Yeah, for sure. When it comes to health and nutrition, there is way too much confusing information on the internet. What's the truth about supplements? Should you fast? What's the deal with toxins? It seems like no one can agree, and you're left on your own to decide the information you can trust. Often, you have to wait for a doctor's visit just to get your questions answered. The solution? The Table Talk monthly membership. We have two live question and answer sessions on the second and fourth Monday of the month, where you can bring all of your health-related questions and get real answers from our farm-to-table functional medicine pharmacist. This is valuable information about relevant health topics that are important to you. Real, practical solutions to improving your health. Personalized information and tools that can help you be empowered on your health journey. Sign up today and get your first month free. Check us out at farmtotable.life. Click on Programs and then click on Table Talk Membership. Awesome. Well, we will move into ways that we can connect with others. So this list could probably be miles long, probably, but we have some points that we wanted to make sure that we covered here. So Christine, do you want to lead us off with some of those?
Sure. Yeah. So these aren't universal. There's certain, I have a couple in mind. So one would be, emphasizing physical touch. I would say, with your partner or a close friend, that really, when you hug someone, it releases oxytocin, and that's a hormone. It's our feel good, it's our love hormone. And studies have actually found that people who are in social isolation have lower levels of oxytocin than those who are in community. And it leads to psychiatric issues, reduction in quality of life, and even cardiovascular disease. So trying to just take a moment and, hug your spouse a little longer, or even, I know I do this, book a massage. If I could get a massage every day, I would.
Oh, totally.
Huge fan. And sometimes you'll have that friend that just comes and rubs your back or just scratches your back, and you just get that feeling, which is a really good feeling. That's the oxytocin release. And so even dancing or even booking a partner yoga class or a partner acro yoga class. We've tried one of those. You have to be very careful. Don't make it hurt. They're fun, but
aerial yoga.
Aerial yoga. Yeah. A bit dangerous.
I have to have some experience in yoga to sign up for that first.
Yeah. They didn't tell me that. I would say those are definitely some good ways to get that release of oxytocin and establish a closeness or more of a bond with others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
I think going to mention something on the list that we had on the outline was volunteering for a cause that's meaningful to you. And I definitely can relate to that myself. So I volunteer with the MS Society, or the Upper Midwest Chapter MS Society, with regards to doing different events and sitting on various committees. And my mom had MS and she passed away 10 years ago. And I just find that to be really meaningful. It fills my bucket with regards to knowing that I'm able to help the greater MS community in my area and just make connections and help influence, different opportunities that become available that MS Society provides. So it helps me feel close to that community and closer to my mom in a sort of way as well.
Awesome. Yeah, that when you said filling your bucket, that reminds me of, there's a book called The Five Love Languages. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't checked it out, definitely check it out. We'll put a link to it in our show notes. But it talks about how some people are physical touch people. So they would love, to connect. They would feel more connection with the physical touch. I mean, I think everyone does to an extent, but there's some people that really thrive on that. And then some people are this words of affirmation people. And so what they thrive on or feel loved and connected with people is when there's, affirmation type words, telling them that they're doing a good job, or, writing them a note about how much they mean to you and things like that. That's totally one of my, my bucket fillers. And then there's gifts, and gift giving is one way to show your love to someone. And then also even acts of service. Mm-hmm. And so serving one another is, like you said, with the MS is one mm-hmm. way that fills you up, but also people receive those gifts. And so figuring out the people in your circle, how they feel love. If they're not a, touchy-feely person, then maybe you have to figure out if it's one of those, other buckets that makes them feel loved. But it's definitely a good read, because it can apply to, I think there's a kid's version, a more, spouse type version. but showing, you know, how you connect with people. Cause I found in past relationships that sometimes like the way they are showing me love isn't how I felt loved. And then, you know, that makes things a little bit more challenging if you're not trying to love the person and how they best receive it. Mm-hmm. So it's like fascinating, you know, conversation type two that we all sort of fall into one of these like categories. Yeah. Oh, we have on here. Pets.
Well, I would just,
oh, go ahead, Sarah. Sorry.
My ultimate favorite way and easiest way to keep that connection with people is just to say yes. Cause I have found that the more times that you say yes, the more things you're asked to. And if you say yes, then you're going to these things. And it's just a way to kind of keep that flowing in kind of a non-organized way and not really specific, but it's a pretty easy thing to do. It's hard like when at someone the moment.
Say, let's grab coffee or
yes,
you know,
yes.
let's, you know, do something like that. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that's important too. Cause sometimes I feel like we're at the end of the day and we just want to like be on our own and like calm down with however we do that. But having, those are the times where, you know, we have a fire pit out back and, you know, sometimes some of the women from the neighborhood will just like sit around it and chat like at the end of a long week. And those are the times where you're like, oh my goodness, 3 hours just went by, guys, we need to go to bed. And you forget about time because you're so engaged in that relationship. So that's really cool. Awesome. All right. Well, I think the last ones we talked about volunteering already, pets obviously can, and that affection from a pet can also has data to show, you know, lowers anxiety levels. And if you love pets, maybe you find the people that also love pets in these different groups and dog parks and all of those types of things. So it might be a way to connect with others. Not my way of connecting with others.
I was going to say, you need to convince my husband to get a pet, a puppy of something.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah. No, that's not happening here unless like something crazy changes, but I don't know. It's just hard because we're in like the middle of the state, our parents are in the other places. We always have to like go to someone else and just finding someone to watch. Like I am allergic to cats, so I couldn't even get one of those. So it'd be like a dog and they require more maintenance. So we'll just have to love
it. We have neighborhood dogs. They're very low maintenance once they get out of the puppy stage, but they love humans.
Talk to me again in like 5 years when the kids have convinced us and we'll probably have one, but
we just have two little fish. And before that we had a betta fish. And did you know that betta fish can disintegrate?
So
our betta fish disintegrated because it appears my children overfed it. Oh, I guess if you overfeed it, the water becomes toxic and it literally just disintegrates. Like one day I'm like, he's not swimming around in there. And so we clean the fish, nowhere to be found.
The analogy about, you know, overfeeding a fish and that becomes toxic, thinking about humans, like, oh, we overfeed ourselves.
That right. And that
maybe, I don't think we're just going to disintegrate though.
If we lose in water, maybe.
Maybe. Awesome. Cool. Well, we might just have to end it right there on the betta fish disintegrating. But we definitely encourage you guys, find your community. If you're a functional medicine provider that's listening to this today, get in touch with colleagues. It's a hard job to do. We have so many people coming to us with difficult things. And without that community or other network of providers to bounce things off of, it can make it stressful for you as a provider to be able to take on so much of the weight of the stress and the trauma and things that our patients have experienced. And then, you know, also attending events and learning from others, like there's so much energy that comes off of conferences that we get to go to, whatever field you're in, those kinds of things can really help to not only develop yourself, but learning from others obviously improves your all around career goals. So, and then masterminds are another great way. I know my husband, he's in the tech space and podcasting space and was his own. He had his own business for a while before he joined another company and he was in a mastermind group and so much energy in those groups as far as, okay, we're going to do this. This is my goal. I have someone to keep me accountable. And so it's almost like creating that community for you. And he still talks to so many of those people from that group that was years ago. So we're going to be starting a mastermind group with Functional Medicine CE. So if you're a pharmacist listening, stay tuned for more information about that. But it's, you know, definitely a really cool way to get involved with people that are like-minded with your career. So, all right, well, we will close it there. So thanks so much for listening. And you can find us at farmtotable, PharmTotable.life. LIFE. And if you're interested in learning more, you can either check out our discovery class or you can click on make an appointment and book a discovery call with one of our providers. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening.
We're excited you are on your journey with us. Find us online at farmtotable.life, farm with a P, and on Instagram at farmtotableteam.